Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the School of Influence podcast. I like to keep intros as short as possible, especially when you have amazing guests. But I do need to say a few things before I hand the mic over to Amanda to introduce our guest today, Jesse Itzler, because what do you say about someone? And the more you learn about him and what he has accomplished in life, it's really incredible. From musician to New York Times bestselling author to successful entrepreneur selling multiple businesses, 100x mile runner, I could go on and on. Most people dream of being able to have this sort of success in one of these categories, and Jesse's truly done it in many, and I can't wait to hear what's on his roadmap for the future. But it's also a reminder that, you know, yielding influence, those that have influence often have success in something. So I think today we might also be talking about how do you become successful in so many different things in such little time. But Amanda, I know that obviously, most importantly, Jesse wrote the foreword for your book, The Influencer Code, which everybody should have a copy of. And before I hand it over, my 13-year-old son made me say, good job on getting Bogdanovich, Gallinari, and Rondo for the Hawks this year. So Amanda, hand it over to you.
Thank you, Neil. I'm really excited to have Jesse Itzler on this podcast for so many different reasons, because he really is somebody to me that personifies real influence, which is, you know, a mission of why I've even done this podcast and the book and all of these things, is that he yields true influence in so many categories and the ability to make real life changes over people in so many different categories in business, in the traditional term of the word success, and in the sort of life success. So from starting, like Neil said, from starting a music company to, I think it was a theme music company, which you sold, to a private jet company, to, you know, 100 Mile Group. It's hard to even keep up. So I think that's where I want to hand it off to, like, in a nutshell, when people ask you this, and you do so many interviews, when people ask you, so what do you do? How do you answer that question?
You know, I struggle with it. If you guys have a good little thing I could, a soundbite I could use, I would love it. I've always struggled with it. I've always struggled with that because I don't know. I still feel like even I'm 52, I'm still trying to figure out like what I am doing and what I want to do. And I've dabbled in a lot of different industries. You guys mentioned a couple of private jets. I had a coconut water company we sold to Coke and a jet company that was sold, and a lot of failures and a lot of different things. And I think I just get bored easily and I like newness. You know, it's really hard as you get older to create newness in your life. But I love newness. I love challenges, and I'm highly ADD, so I bounce around a lot. But I think the one common theme again in all those things that we mentioned is I had no experience in any of them going in. When I started in private aviation, we had no airplanes. I was a kiddie pool attendant 4 years before that. My dad owned a plumbing supply house, and we started the world's largest private jet card company and did it quickly because experience takes a long time. And I didn't feel like when I was in my 20s and 30s, I had a long time. I felt like I had to get an idea and go and figure it out as I was going and find the people that could help me and seek people that could really get me from A to B fastest. And that's what I did. And I guess I was seeking people of influence or people that could help me navigate. But the process was always the same. There was humongous enthusiasm around the goal, like off the charts enthusiasm. that outweighed all the obstacles that, like, I was so enthusiastic about every project that I've done. I still am, that when inevitably, when those obstacles or challenges come, they meant nothing to me because they weren't going to water down the enthusiasm that was going through my veins.
I love that. One question that I have is, like, especially in this time of like so much anxiety around careers and what's going to happen in the future. And I deal with this, and I think Neil does too, every single day with like these guys, people graduating, whether it's an MBA program or an undergraduate program. And they're like, well, everybody wants experience and we, you know, don't have experience. And one of the things that, you know, I love about you is that you said, I don't have experience in these categories. And I try to tell them, don't compete on experience. There's other things to compete on. And can you tell a little bit of kind of the intro to like, okay, for example, private jets, I would think one of the categories that would be extremely hard to just like jump into, like between aviation and who knows what else. How did you open that door? Like who did you have to get in front of? And how did you just like sell them on the idea?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, don't underestimate enthusiasm, you know, because at the end of the day, you're the business plan. People buy into people and people buy into stories and momentum more than products. And when you have no experience, you have to sell yourself. And if you're not enthusiastic about the idea, you're probably not going to get partners, money, sales, whatever it is. So I always brought that to the table. And I'll tell you, I don't invest in a lot of stuff anymore. I just invest in my own projects. But I think everything is a good idea. So anyone that comes to me with a widget, I'm like, I'll do it. It's a great idea because I just want to support everybody. It's in my nature. And a fellow had a bread company. It was like one of these grain-free, new, you know, plant-based, checked all the boxes, like, you know, no gluten, no plant, no soy, no this. And I was like, I'm in, you know, I'm in. But because I say yes to everything, my wife and I have created a team of three advisors that kind of have to, you know, vet whether or not the deals are good deals, because otherwise I'll have 1,000 investments and that's not ever a good thing. So I said, so, you know, send it to my team and they have to just put their eyes on it and review it. So it goes to this 3-person committee, you know, like one guy is like, you know, lawyer at this firm and one guy's like done like a million MMA deals. It's like, it's a legit team of advisors. And like 30 minutes later, I get this email back and it's like, you have to be crazy. You know, no, it's a pass. One, this guy has never been in the CEO of a company. He has no marketing background. He has never ran a company. This is overpriced. It's, you know, like all these different things. And I just said, called up my team and I said, you know, have you ever met Steve? And they're like, no. And then I said, okay. And I said 3 words, wire the money. Because Steve had this passion and enthusiasm of like, no matter what, he's going to make it work. He needed the win. He was all in on it. All these intangibles that don't show up on a balance sheet or don't show up on your pitch deck. And, you know, those traits and characteristics are so important. I did the same thing when we were trying to get a deal at Marquee Jet. You know, we had no experience, no airplanes, nothing. We had our first pitch meeting with the CEO of a company called NetJet, owned by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, a multi-billion dollar company. And the meeting lasted 12 minutes. We got thrown out because we had no experience and blah, 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 blah. But we were able to get another meeting because one of the folks in the room saw something in my partner and I and said, you know what? Come back again and bring this to life. I just show it to us a different way. I don't know. There's something here. And we realized that we could never sell our idea in a PowerPoint because they had seen so many PowerPoints. We had to like be different. And part of being an entrepreneur, part of being of gaining influence or whatever is showing people a different perspective, doing things differently, shocking the world. And, you know, you have to be bold. So we brought in our own focus group. I brought 8 other people to the meeting and set up 8 chairs around the desk. And one by one, they each stood up and they pitched in testimonial form why they would buy a jet card, what we were offering versus a fraction of a plane, what NetJets was selling. And we got the deal. And, you know, it was part of that was pushing the right buttons. Part of that was thinking differently. And part of it was just the fact that we showed up again and, you know, had this new angle that like, whoa, they brought in their own focus group, you know, like it made these guys something flip in the CEO's head that said, I'm going to bet on these guys. I was 28 years old.
Wow.
You know, and green, man, green. I'd never really been in a battle. I'd never really been in a big pitch meeting, you know, but they didn't buy the concept of Marquee Jet. They bought that my partner and I were going to make some magic happen. You're the business plan. And I think that's a really important thing. And, you know, just going back to the top of this conversation, you know, before we even got on, we were talking about success and influence before we hit record. And I think it's important to define success. Everybody has their own definition of success. But to me, part of that definition is being good in multiple areas. It's being a good dad, being a good, you know, friend, husband, son or daughter, being good at business, being good at whatever you're doing, you know? And it's just checking the box in multiple buckets. It's not necessarily being a good stock trader and becoming a billionaire. That just makes you rich. That doesn't mean you're necessarily successful. Are you philanthropic? Are you, you know, there's a lot of different buckets to me that equal success. And people are following people on Instagram, people of influence that, you know, that, and they think, oh, wow, success. I was just watching this guy the other night, 32 million followers on Instagram. But like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, how is this guy putting influence on people? His dad was in jail. He's, you know, got all this money in a trust fund, hasn't worked, you know, gambler. Like, it was like, I just didn't understand how, you know, you got to be careful about who you choose to be influenced by, you know? And I want to say one more thing. When I was 21 years old or in my 20s, I used to go to these meetings. I sold my first company at a young age. And I remember being in a room for the first time with mega successful humans. And I'd be like, oh my God, this guy's got a place in the Hamptons and this guy's got this and he owns a sports team and he owns, and she owns this and he owns that. It was very inspiring. And I was like, when I went back in that room 20 years later, not literally, figuratively, if I were to go back, I would look at many of those people and be like, they were just rich. You know what I mean? Like they weren't living the kind of life that I really wanted to design for myself. So you got to be careful of those you're influenced by.
Yeah, Jesse, I wanted to dig a little bit deeper and we'll get to your question, Amanda. Sorry about that.
No, go ahead.
I'm just curious. Yeah, when we talk about, you know, influencers, there's a lot of advice out there. Well, if you want to become more influenced, you need to become more passionate about something. And you use the word enthusiasm. And to me, that just has like a deeper, like more passionate than passion, like you're all in emotionally, physically, spiritually. Would you say that's the case? Or am I just reading too much into the difference between those two words?
No, I think enthusiasm, I like the word enthusiasm. It depends what we're talking about, but I think enthusiasm trumps passion.
And where would you say the DNA of your enthusiasm comes? Have you just always been, did you grow up just enthusiastic about everything you did, even as a kid?
I don't know, but yes, for sure. I think, you know, I would get a spelling bee and I'd be like, yes, mom, I have a spelling test tomorrow. And I'm not even a good speller, you know? And I would be like, this is like, there's a test. I'm in, like, I like the challenge. As I've gotten older, I think, because I've given a lot of thought to this, I think it stems from my relationship with time. And I think people think of relationships in terms of people or, you know, how's your relationship, Neil, with your mom or your dad or Amanda with, you know, this person or that person. But we rarely think of our relationship in terms of money. What's your relationship with money? And what's your relationship with time? And I am very aware of my own mortality. I'm very aware that I can't get my 30s back. I can't get my 20s back. I won't be able to get my 50s back. And I'm also very aware that on any given day, it could change, you know? And I don't feel like I need a tragedy in my life to change me. A lot of people like, oh, I just got my cholesterol diagnosed, you know, tested and it's high. I'm going to give up eating, blah, 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 blah. I don't need high cholesterol to know that I want to live as healthy as I can. I don't need to get a tumor to make all these radical changes. So because of my own reality of my own mortality, and it's created like, how could I not be enthusiastic? Like I'm here for such a short amount of time, especially when you turn 50, man, because you look at 80. 80 looks so close. We're both over 50, right, Neil? You're over 50.
Yeah, what month were you born?
August.
Okay, so I'm actually 8 months old. I was born in December of this year, like this month. So
oh.
I got you on age, yeah.
Okay, well, yes. I mean, like we're looking at 80 in the face almost, you know, and I don't want to regret being like I blew my 30s, 40s, 50s. So, and just, I don't know, man. I spend a lot of time talking about gratitude, you know? And like, I would say that was so, like, if you asked me 10 years ago, that's so corny, man. You talk about, but I'm always like, I say to my wife, you know, both of our parents are alive. Our kids are healthy, knock on wood. Like, how's it going to get better than this? And I also say, let's project out 10 years. My dad's going to be 91. Is he going to live to 101? I hope so. But odds are not. Life looks different in 10 years. So yeah. I think about that stuff, man. And I look forward. I don't look back very often, but I do look forward and say, you know, in 8 years, our kids are out of the house. Parents might not be here. The world's different. So I'm very, very enthusiastic around the opportunities that I have and, you know, everything that I have. And I talk about it and I think about it a lot. You know, it's the first thing I say when I wake up and the last thing I say when I go to sleep, you know, is I say that I'm thankful, man. I think it starts from that, from gratitude.
That's awesome.
Just one thing I wanted to ask you, and we kind of touched on this a little bit with the passion versus enthusiasm thing. And there's like this whole movement on like, follow your passion. You wake up every morning and you ask yourself what you want to do in the morning. And if it's not something that you want to do that today, then that's not what you should be doing. And I would love your perspective because it's something that I highly disagree. Like I've never followed that mantra because I think that if I were to wake up and say, what do I want to do today? And if it's not fun anymore, if it gets hard, you stop doing it. Or I think there's a difference between passion being following your passion, because how do you even know, like, how did you know that you want to run Ultraman? How did you know you're passionate about that if you've never done it before versus like doing something and being passionate about what you do? And the reason I ask this question is because I stand in front of like 200 students that are all at these top school and they're so ambitious and they're like, I don't know, but I don't know what I want to do because I don't know what my passion is. So how would you speak to that? Because you've done it in so many different categories and I can't imagine you woke up one day and were like, I'm passionate about airplanes.
No, see, I wasn't passionate about airplanes. I was passionate about the process. So I think there's a difference when I talk about passion, people like, you know, follow your passion. I think people get a little bit misguided because I think the passion has to be around the process. So if I'm selling, you can't see it, we're not on video, but a pen that I'm holding up, the passion can't be around like, oh my God, I love this pen. I don't even think my wife's passion is around Spanx. The passion is around the process, the mission, the creativity, the customer relations. Like there's a much bigger thing than like, because on the days when you get a call, and I'm taking this from the perspective of an entrepreneur, I could take it from the perspective of a runner or anything else that says, you know, the factory is lost power and there's an emergency and you have to deal with it and et cetera, et cetera. You know, the passion starts to go away, but that's what you signed up for. The good, the bad, the good training days, the bad training days, the rain, the thing that, you know, the traffic. And you have to have a passion for like, this is what I am and what I'm doing. And so I think the underlying passion isn't around the actual product. It's around the process. I mean, think about a UFC fighter. They train for 6 months for a fight that might last 15 seconds. The passion isn't around, people see the fight, but the passion has to be around the 8-hour gym sessions. You know, the work that goes behind it and all that. If you lose that, then there is no fight. There is no Spanx. There is no marker.
I like that.
Can I just say, like, Amanda, like I'm training for this race called Ultraman right now. And the end goal, obviously, is to complete this great thing. But day in and day out, the conversation in my head is about getting better, becoming a better swimmer, a better biker, a better running, becoming healthier, learning about my limits, going out on the cold days, on the warm days, learning different things on my diet. Like that's where all the passion is. The race, it's the cherry on the cake. It's insignificant, honestly. And also the race is already done. In my head, I've completed it. It's already done. I know I'm going to do it. You know, I'm going to finish the race and I've already envisioned it in my head every day. I mean, I swam today. It's all I was thinking about. The race is 4 months away. The day after, how I feel, the race is done, but the journey, it's the journey. And I think that's, you know, and people know that. I'm not saying anything new, but I think people get lost in that and they get misguided or they get misguided by the reward. People want to feel accomplished. It's the one thing we all have in common. We want to feel accomplished. And accomplished, if my father wired me $1 million, there's no accomplishment there. If my parents give me a car, I'm going to treat it a lot differently than a car that I buy with my first hard-earned money because of the passion around that I put into that car.
That's so interesting. And it actually kind of highlights something because having run a lot of miles and biked and swam, I've often been asked like, how are you so passionate about running? And I have to say, I'm like, I hated running. I still hate running. I don't love like pounding the pavement at 4 a.m. and it's freezing cold, but you love the way that it makes you feel and what it does to the rest of your life so much that you're going to pound the pavement at 4 a.m. when it's cold outside. Not because you're enjoying that exact mile, but because of what it does for the greater life. That's an interesting way of phrasing that. I never thought of it that way.
Physically and spiritually, like when you run, it's also, again, the sense of accomplishment that like I got out there, I prioritized myself. You know, even if there's a physical feeling, you feel amazing, you know, physically.
Right.
But there's a whole other thing of putting yourself first, doing, you know, making sure you got this done, prioritize. It's just, there's a lot behind the scenes that all lead to when you're done with that run, feeling accomplished, checking the box, you know, more than the miles or the time or, you know, and I think that's a really important thing. They asked Richard Branson what the number one thing was that led to his success. And I believe he said his answer was going to the gym. And I don't think he meant like lifting dumbbells. I think it was the consistency of setting a habit every day, prioritizing himself, putting himself first, and sticking to it because it sets a tone, you know, for everything else. And that's the process.
I have an, this is off topic of influence, but I do have it's a correlation to success. And I wonder it with different people that have success in various different categories, whether it's, you know, an Olympic athlete that's broken a record or whether it's, you know, somebody that built a company or whatever it is. Do you have correlation between an obsessiveness with managing like scheduling time? Like, how do you go about, like, for me, that's something I've struggled with as an, I joke that it's OCD, but it's like, no, the day I know, you know, there's 24 hours in a day and it is like, this is how we're going to do it. And to a point of like obsessiveness.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't even feel like I don't have 24 hours in a day because two of my hours are carpool, taking my kids to school. So like I start off with, no matter what, I start off with 24
a deficit.
Hours. Right. So I'm starting with 22. So I'm already at a disadvantage from people that think they have 24. So I have to be way more efficient. I mean, most people talk about the importance of morning routines, and morning routines are definitely important. But I'm a much bigger believer in evening routines because for me, my day starts the night before. I can't, like, none of us are just good enough to wake up and wing it. What am I going to do today? Like, what's the most important thing? How should I spend my day? Like, the competition's too good. What are the top CEOs in the country? What happens to them every day? Most of them have three assistants. They walk in and Amanda walks in and Amanda gets from one of her assistants a sheet with a list. Amanda, at 9 o'clock, you're here. 10:15, you're here. 11 o'clock, we're going to get in the car and go here. 12 o'clock is lunch. A 1 o'clock, call this person. It's all laid out. Most people don't have three assistants. So the night before, I don't have three assistants. I just write on my board exactly what my day looks like. And I follow the script. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm locked in. I'm not looking at my phone. When you tell me it's over, it's over. And then I'm going to go to my wall. I'm going to say, okay, what happens after this? And I'm going to go do that. And there's things carved out for my kids and for me and my swim and this and that. And my day is already planned. I'm just following the script. I don't see how I could wake up, you know, and be like, okay, there's 24 hours. How am I going to do it? It wouldn't be efficient. Now, that doesn't mean I don't squander time or watch TV or, you know, but I think it's really important to have a plan. There's an old saying, wars are won in the general's tent. You got a plan, you know, you got a plan.
Thank you.
I wanted to switch gears, Jesse, and just, you know, trying to dissect like your life for our listeners. And I wanted to get into something you talked about where you tried to fast track success through relationships of trying to meet people that can help you get from point A to point B. And I think that part of building influence, there's definitely this, not just, you know, collaborating with other influencers, but also those, you know, building those relationships. And I think it's something that a lot of people don't talk about enough because it really is important. So can you tell us more about, you know, the process or maybe just a case study of how you did that, like with Marquee Jet that helped you get success? I'm assuming you didn't know who to contact at Berkshire Hathaway at the beginning to pitch them. So maybe we can start with that.
Well, first of all, you never know. So for me, that started in my 20s because the people that you come across in your 20s and 30s are going to be the people of influence in your 40s and 50s. They'll be people of power in your 40s and 50s. And you never know who those people are going to be. When I started writing jingles for NBA teams, Adam Silver just started working at NBA Entertainment. You know, we knew each other and 20 years later, who had to approve my ownership my minority stake in the Atlanta Hawks, Adam Silver. He has the power to say yay or nay.
Right.
And I needed him, you know, and we had this relationship. I didn't know that was going to happen when I was 22 years old. So the first thing I would say is you never know. So you better be nice and stay in touch with everybody. And I've invested a lot in that. I do it in the form of every single day. And this is something anybody can do. I call it the 3-minute miracle, but I just did it the other day. I'm going to do it with an example, Neil. I go to a basketball camp that Coach K throws at Duke University every year for guys 35 and older. I've been going for 17 years. And I landed in North Carolina a couple of months ago. So I thought of Coach K. So I sent him a thank you text. It just said, Coach Jesse Itzler, thanks so much for doing your camp. I know you don't have to do it, but every year you make me feel like an 8-year-old for a couple of days. I built amazing relationships and I just want to thank you. The camp's like 7 months away. No one's thinking about it. He's not thinking about it. He's thinking about the season. Now, that took me 45 seconds to send. He might share that with his staff. Got this really cool note. We're doing a great thing with this camp. He might tell his wife. He might do nothing. But now, at camp, who's the first person he's going to hug? There's 500 campers. Who's the first one? Me. If I see Coach K out at dinner, and now that little text gives me permission to go over to him and say, hey, Coach, I sent you this text. Not sure if you got it, but I'm not coming out of nowhere. If I need something and call him, it's not coming out of a place of like, oh, I know I haven't spoken to you in 5 years, but... You know what I mean? Now that took me 45 seconds. So if you invest 3 minutes a day and you send 3 texts, emails, handwritten letters, DMs, over the course of a year, you'll send 1,000 texts, DMs, or handwritten letters. That's planting a lot of seeds. That's staying connected to a lot of people. If you invest 10 minutes a day and send 10 minutes a day on a commute, on a train, whatever, that will be over 3,000 texts, DMs, handwritten letters, or emails. Now, I'm not saying all 3,000 of those are going to be people I do business with or I need or can advance my career, but I only need one.
Yeah.
I need one that can give me the big referral. I need one that can open up the door. I need one that owns NetJets. I need one that has a relationship with Coca-Cola so I can get into Zico. How did all of those relationships that I had happen? How did I get into Coca-Cola when we had Zico? How did I get into NetJets? They weren't like, I didn't cold call people. They were because I planted a lot of seeds in my 20s and 30s that put me in a position to call in some chips. So all of this stuff, when you talk about building influence, to me, it's cumulative. And the earlier you start and the more consistent you are, the more influence you'll have.
I'm reminded of success is not about what you know, but who you know. And that's just a great living example. So thank you for sharing that.
No, I don't even think it's who you know. I think it's what you do with who you know.
Even better.
Right? It's what you do, because I can know a lot of people, but if I don't know how to tap into them or ask them, like, you know, I was just saying this the other day because I was negotiating something with somebody and they wanted me to get to so-and-so. And I said, look, I have one ask with this person. I can't go to them for 50 things. I can go to them for one thing. So if I'm going to go to them to this one thing and you're going to, you know, use my influence, quote unquote, you know, I was using it in the form of a negotiation, but it's true. So it's not just who, it's but how you use them, when, you know, how you connect with them and when. And sometimes there's been many times where I've had the relationship and I haven't made the call because I didn't want to ruin the relationship. You know, you have to know when to separate those things too. Because sometimes influence can just be like, you know what? Call Neil and ask Neil to vouch for me. You know, we have a mutual friend. Why don't you just call Neil and ask him if I'd be a good business partner?
Right.
That's another form of influence it's like behind the scenes influence.
Absolutely.
You know, to me, real influence is when people are talking about you when you're not even there.
Yeah.
And they're saying, you know, yeah, you know, Amanda, I know. Oh my God, so do I. She's amazing. That's the best testimonial you can ever get when a friend says you're amazing, your book is amazing, the podcast is amazing. That's true marketing and true influence.
Amen.
In terms of, it's easy for, I think, people to, like, especially knowing you, I remember when we did that, you know, the very first 29029, you have a knack for bringing people together of all different walks of life and creating influential relationships. And by nature being the connector, that builds you more influence for you as well. But one thing I remember is, prior to that, I had run a lot of races and been at a lot of major global events, from Olympic trials, even across the board. And I have never heard, you made like, I think I must have been impromptu speech, right before we were about to start. And I'm like, my God, I have listened to coaches after coaches, like try to pep talk before. And I've listened to a few good ones, but you had this very like incredible way of speaking and being able to motivate people. And so as you're talking about, and even just people listening to this today and listen to the way you talk and, you know, walking into whether it's NetJets or Atlanta Hawks or whatever it is, I think that the audience, what they might, we might not be able to help but think is this a genetic trick? Because there are some things you're naturally, but very few people are going to be able to command that kind of charisma or motivation out of people or speak like that. So the question is it a genetic trait? Can it be learned? And is it a combination of both for those that are not so like, it's not naturally about them to speak in front of a group of people?
You know, I think not everyone can play shortstop. You know, you have to play your position. And I think as long as you stay in your lane, you don't have to be the most charismatic. You don't have to be the best speaker. You don't have to be the smartest. You know, as long as you tell your story and you tell everyone has a story, a unique story. I used to always tell people at Marquee Jet during sales calls, they would go in. The biggest mistake people would make is they would go in and they would try to pitch like they were myself or my partner. We founded the company. They couldn't because just I don't have to establish credibility with you. If I go into a meeting and then say, I founded the company, they know they're talking to the highest person, but someone else felt like they did, you know, so they have to go in and they would start to pitch like they were. And I would say like, you're a single mom, connect with the people on that level. Like I'm a single mom. I took this job because X, Y, Z, like sell the why, you know, not the how, not the what, sell the why and talk about yourself. So I think you definitely start on second base. Some people are born more with more charisma. Some people are born with the ability to speak and others aren't, but that doesn't mean that everybody can't cross home plate, you know? So I think I've been deeply moved by introverts, deeply moved by extroverts. There are many people that I follow on social media. They don't even know I'm following them just because their journey is so unique. And that could be a mom with a special needs child or a dad with a special needs child. That could be someone that is, you know, persistent in finding a job. It could be anything. It could be a nugget that I find influences me that others may not. You know, it doesn't matter. We all look for different things or take influence in different ways. So I think to answer your question, Amanda, it definitely helps to be born with something, you know, or be good at something. But I think that it can also be taught or established no matter who you are, if you stay in your lane. And it doesn't mean it comes without, you have to work at it. I still work at it. You work at it. But it's, you know, if you're in your lane and you hate, you could still establish a lot of influence in your own way.
Yeah. And you say, stay in your lane. I never thought of that way. I've always said, like, use what you have.
Imagine you're at a poker table and you're playing. I don't play poker. I've like never played poker really. But so this might be a bad example. So, you know, if you play poker, you say, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Bring it on.
Someone's loud. They got the glasses on. Everyone's staring at them because they look like the best poker player. And, you know, they're chewing gum. You can't see their eyes. They never blink. They're in on every hand. They're bluffing. They're playing. But there's 10 people at the table and 9 people are like that. But one person's at the poker table. They don't say anything. They look scared. They haven't played any hands. They fold on every hand. And then all of a sudden the pot's big. And after 3 hours, they play the first hand and they're betting everything up. My natural would be in sync would be like, I'm out. Like they just played 3 hours. They haven't played one hand. They must have a really good hand if they're playing a hand now.
Yep.
And that person has influenced me in their own way through silence, through different things. You know, they had a different way of influencing me. They stood out in a completely different way, but they stood out.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you assume they're pretty freaking intelligent analyzing the situation.
Right.
And yeah, no, exactly. That's well put.
So the one fun question, you know, to wrap up that I like to ask is that of the people in your life, your journey through this on the earth that are not in any immediate, because a lot of us, so a family or, you know, our business partner or, you know, a spouse or a child or a parent, but outside of like an immediate circle that is part of your invested in your life, who has been one of the most influential factors, whether you know them or not, on your career, on your sort of your trajectory that you really feel like that they changed the way you think or your vision or
You know, I've had a lot. So I've been very lucky to have people that have taken me in different directions. We always hear surround yourself with like-minded people, but I've always gone the other way. I felt like-minded people are going to do things that I like to do and do already, but people that are unlike me will give me a new perspective. And that's one of the reasons why I lived on a monastery with 8 monks. And that's one of the reasons why a Navy SEAL came and lived with me. And that's one of the reasons why I've been attracted to different, you know, kinds of people. But I really would want to think about this more. But biggest influencer in my life was a guy named Harvey Diamond. Wrote a book called Fit for Life in the 80s. And I read it and it changed how I eat and how I live my life. And I think that's had the single biggest impact on me. And I became friends with him 10 years later. After I read the book, I cold called him and asked him to basically be my friend. And we became really good friends. But I think he had the biggest impact on me. And I would say Harvey Diamond.
Thank you. In response to that, I have to say this, and I hate to be one of those podcasters that's like, you know, the rah, rah, rah. But I have to say that the reason you're on this and the reason that, you know, I wrote the forward for the book is you are somebody that's had a very, very big impact, influence on my career and a lot of the way that I think and some of the different ventures that I've done. And, you know, we don't know each other very well personally, but from a far away place, I resonate on so many ways. The hustle, the like, I'm going to tell them what's in it for them and they're going to jump on my train and we're going to do this. And by you putting your name on a book or behind someone, I don't think you do realize, but how much that influences other people's lives. And there have been a lot of people through, especially my 20s, that when you're not there yet, they say no, or they won't. And I think that that was something that stuck with me because I came from a place of no safety net. I never relied on anybody for anything and I never had that. And so you kind of need the first, like, you know, you kind of need the first frog to leap from, and then you can build from there. And you just need to get that first frog sometimes. And for me, there were certain people that were those people. And I think what drove me more was the people that could have taken them 45 seconds and didn't, that I was like, I never want to be that person. And you were one of those people that opens, like that legitimately uses your influence to really help other people. And it's impacted me in a big way from afar. So thank you very much.
I appreciate that. And I would say, you know, we communicated a lot on your book. You know, you were sending me emails and I got 4 kids. I'm not always easy to get in touch with, but I want to tell you.
Driving him crazy.
No. What I was going to say is you could do an entire podcast on tone because you had I don't think people understand the importance of your tone in an email. In an email, sometimes tone gets misconstrued or lost because you can't see the mannerisms and my voice goes up and down. I'm excited. I'm not excited. You're a jerk. You know, you don't see that in email. You just read the words. So tone is hard to come across in an email. There's an art to writing emails when you want someone to get something done. That's another form of influence. You know, can you influence someone through your words when you're not even on the screen, when they don't even see you? In all of those communications, even if I was 2 days late on writing something or sending something or asking me to show up or can I go here or whatever the request was, the tone was always on point. So it was never felt annoying. It never felt heavy. It never felt like you were coming from a place of, you know, desperation or anything, which you weren't, and none of that. It was just like respectful, fun, funny, and right. So there's an art form to that. And, you know, sometimes people piss you off and they're just like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I can't believe how you're coming at me for this, you know, and you didn't do that. And it's not easy, especially when you have multiple, Neil, you know what I'm talking about? Like,
oh, I know exactly.
Right. And, you know, people communicate through text and email, and that's a completely different form of communication than when we're, you know, right now we can see each other. So we're nodding our heads, we're laughing, we're smiling, we're focused, right. You know, we have eye contact. Email is a different animal. It's a different animal. And so I want to commend you on that. And, you know, when you talk about influence, I think I wouldn't poo-poo how it relates to nonverbal communication, you know, influencing through words, influencing through, because I don't know how many emails you send or get a day, but probably way more than people you speak to on the phone or in a Zoom call. So you better be really good at influencing people through email, through your subject line and through your text. And all that. And I don't, you know, no one really talks about that ever. You never hear that. And I think it's a really important thing.
That's actually a really good point. And it's something actually we should remember that to explore, because the other thing they don't talk about is how certain non-people, non-humans are massive influential factors. So if I told you, Jesse, can you invest in my app? I'm developing this app. You'd be like, great. Everybody's developing an app. Like, I don't even know you. I'm not going to invest in your app. And if I said, well, you know, I'm developing this app and Google is actually one of my investors, but I really like you to be a part of it too. Would you be interested? Then all of a sudden you're like, Google is investing in you. Like, who the hell are you? Right. So that association is very influential too.
See, that goes to, like, you know, you asked me about Marquee Jet. I'm always looking for that one person, that anchor sale, that anchor customer. When I started in the jingle business, I wrote a song for the New York Knicks. I was writing theme songs for professional sports teams. I was 22 years old. And the Knicks offered me $4,000 to buy the rights to this song. And the song cost me $4,800 to do. So I was going to lose $800 on the sale. Not only that, but they then went, and I did it. They went on to license it to Foot Locker, to McDonald's. It was in all their TV and media. I lost $800. So basically I paid them $800 and they're selling it to Foot Locker, Budweiser. It's on TV. They're playing it in the arena. People, Spike Lee's waving his tail in videos and I'm negative $800. But the reality is I would have paid the Knicks $10,000 to have, because now I'm telling every team, oh, I just wrote the song for the Knicks. It's the number one song on New York radio. And I built a company off that I sold for $20 million, all because of, I knew the influence that name was, the power in the name. And, you know, I wasn't short-sighted of like, oh, no, I can't. I'm going to sell it to another team so I can make $1,000. It was like, no, I'm going to give it to you and you're the Knicks. So you're right. Look, when you talk about that stuff, you know, it gets you to A to B faster. It's the same thing at Marquee Jet. Once I sold, I don't know, I'm making this up, LeBron James, a Jet card. I'm not really making it up. He was a customer. Then I could go into any player in any league and they knew it was fully vetted. They knew it was the best of the best, you know, and it made everything easier. So like, who is that one person that you could sell, call, whatever? What's that one account for your book? What's the one person on your podcast? Oh, you know, Barack Obama did my podcast. I'd like you to be second. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, what is that one? And that's a really important tactic. A really, really, like I said, in the very, very beginning, people buy into stories and momentum more than the product. So the story, what you said is Google. I don't care what you're about your app. It's insignificant to me what it does. Google's in, I'm in. And they buy into that because that checks the story box and the momentum box.
That's so true.
Yep.
On point. This is, I could talk to you all day long and that would really cut into your calendar time.
Exactly.
And my obsessive compulsive as well. But no, this has been so, you're so generous with your time and energy and all of this stuff. So thank you times a million.
I hope I brought a level of enthusiasm.
Oh yeah.
You have your own unique, charismatic, enthusiasm. Like I said, that time that I saw you that it's speak at 29, I wasn't expecting that. And I rarely am I really moved before, especially before any kind of, not that it was a race, but whatever.
Everything's a race to you, Amanda. you're competitive.
It's true. You have no idea. Yeah. When you said, when we talked about time, my dad's like, as soon as you could walk, it was like, how fast can I run around the house? But only if you time it, otherwise the run doesn't count.
Right.
Only if I can win. How can I win?
If you have to show up and you're going to do a podcast, or you have to show up and you want to go to a dinner that you might not necessarily want to be at, but you have to be there, why wouldn't you be enthusiastic? Because like, if I'm going to do the show, or I'm going to go play with my kids after this or whatever, if I'm not going to show up and put everything into it, why even go? Every year before the beginning of the year, I pick one word that kind of like guides me through the year. It's not something I think about every day, or it doesn't live on my wall. It's not like some, you know, hokey thing, but like, I'm like, what would be a good word this year? Like one year might be process. Like I need a better process. Like I'm all over the place, or I might be focus. But the last 2 years, my word was soul. And it was like, if I'm going to do something, I'm doing everything in 2021 with soul. If I'm going to do a podcast, I'm putting my soul into it. If I'm going to go watch my kids play soccer, I'm going to be where my feet are. That's what I'm doing right now. So if they say, Dad, did you see the play? Yes, I saw that play. You kicked it to Brian and he crossed the field and then you kicked. I'm going to do it with soul. So, you know, you talk about enthusiasm, like if you're going to be there, be there.
I needed that statement right now. That was actually good advice for me right now. As because it's
yeah,
true.
Me too.
Unless you're on a bad date. If you're on a bad date, then you got to figure out like how do I take my enthusiasm the hell out of here, man?
Yeah, that's the emergency call. Oh my God, you know.
Right.
I'm so sorry. Something just happened at work. It's a fire. I gotta go.
Right.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. And Jesse, where can we find you? And so that's a whole other conversation. But you get to see what everything Jesse's doing on how he can help you in your life.
Yeah.
I'm just on, you know, all the social channels, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff under my name at Jesse Itzler. And thank you guys, Neil.
Thank you. Such a fun combo.
What's your next upcoming project that we should all be, and all the listeners should be excited about? What's on the horizon?
If this was on video, I would show you.
Oh.
I have a thing called the Big Ass Calendar Club, where I kind of teach people how to map out their entire year. Like most people play life on defense. Our calendars fill up with appointments, schedules, meetings, soccer games. And like, we have no time like to do anything that we want to do. And This is a system where we play offense instead of defense.
Nice.
Instead of like playing out, you know, getting, filling up, you put your priorities on your calendar first. So I'm really excited about it. I've been doing it for a year and I just improved the program. It's a 1-year program called the Big Ass Calendar Club. You get a big ass calendar, Neil, and you fill it out, Amanda, with the stuff you love to do. And you do it and you have a 15 out of 10 year. So I'm working on that. And, you know, I always have some things up my sleeve. But right now I got 4 kids, man. I'm trying to manage that process with Corona and homeschooling and all this stuff.
Yep. Hear ya. Well, hey, once again, thank you so much. And we'll put that in the show notes. And hopefully this won't be our last time we have a chance to chat.
Amazing. Well, good luck with the podcast, guys. I like that you're doing it. It's a great angle that and you're going to help a lot of people.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.